Pretty good morning to you, Marcus.
Good morning.
Now, why is West Papua such a delicate issue for Australia and Indonesia?
Well, it's been a delicate issue historically for a long time. But most notably, the issue of East Timor is still a sore point for many in Indonesia, and particularly in Indonesian politics. Even in my meetings with Indonesians, it comes up a lot. You know, if we're going to, like they say, if we're going to talk about West Papua, are we going to talk about what happened at East Timor and whether that's going to come back into the kind of Indonesian family? But then also the more obvious things like both countries' commitment to regional stability, trade interests. There's always the resource concerns. Of you know, billions and billions of dollars at stake in terms of resource. And then also we have a massive development program, particularly focused around counterterrorism activities, which both countries are very keen to support Indonesian democracy and to keep the radicals in the margins and very far away from mainstream politics and...
It's an interesting one because obviously, you know, as we said, it was an absent topic of conversation from the Indonesian president and Malcolm Turnbull. I feel like we don't hear a lot about it. Why is it such a quiet topic?
I've been wondering that myself. As somebody who became a little bit captivated by it as soon as I heard about the issue. But I guess, like, for me, it's hidden primarily because international media is very difficult for them to get in because of a almost media blackout imposed by the Indonesian government, as well as that other international NGOs and intergovernmental organizations have historically been denied access or given limited access. So things like UN special mechanism or... UN mechanisms such as the Special Rapporteur for Freedom of Expression and Assembly is only ever given limited access. And then things like the Red Cross and Human Rights Watch have to work in this kind of, an undercover sense, or they can't work there in any official sense. So not being able to work there means they can't advocate for it. And a lot of the time that leaves the space for, well, the only groups that can really operate there are church-based organizations that have histories that go back decades, like the ones that I work for, or the one that I work for, and then others that have missional focuses but can also engage in advocacy activities.
So what role do you think that religion is playing in terms of peace and conflict in West Papua?
Almost out of necessity, it's at the primary point of advocacy and human rights monitoring, as I mentioned, special mechanisms of the UN and human rights monitoring groups have been denied access. So churches have just filled that role. Particularly the Catholic Church has been very active, like they were in East Timor, in human rights monitoring, releasing annual reports, and then feeding into UN bodies like the Human Rights Council. They do a lot of lobbying there, which other groups do as well, but they have the Catholics and Protestant churches have tended to have a very grassroots connection to the people. They're able to report kind of human rights violations straight from the ground, rather than through hearsay and things like that, and they can collect evidence. So one of the big things for them has been making that a more organized thing, rather than, you know, they've all set up their different NGOs or different groups to kind of to hold those responsibilities. And then there's a huge legacy of, or a long legacy of, very courageous indigenous West Papuans who are also members of churches or ministers, priests, who have advocated on for human rights. They've tended to shy away from the issue of political independence because the way that Christians very often see it is that you've got to keep everybody on the same page, and that includes the Indonesians themselves and also their church partners in Indonesia. And everybody has, like, there's an idea that liberation for West Papuans also is the liberation of Javanese and Balinese and all of their transmigrants into the country from Indonesia.
So just finally, I mean, what do you think the future looks like for West Papua?
It's hard to say. Every time a new kind of possibility comes up, the indigenous activists that I mentioned jump on any political opportunity they can, and they have this amazing ability to pivot and to be flexible to changing political circumstances. And while I think people in Australia are very skeptical about the idea of the situation improving in any kind of serious way, those activists and the hope that they have for a change in circumstances, yeah, it gives hope to everybody else that's working for human rights and for peace and justice in that space. So, yeah, I try to stay hopeful.
I like that, try and stay hopeful. Marcus, thank you very much for talking us through the situation this morning.
No, thank you.